From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of December, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. It was a good day in Chicago for the grains and the oil seeds. We'll take up the weather forecast, too, with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And along the way, I'll update you on some agricultural news for the day, including information from Iowa State University on the price of farmland in that state, along with an update on a collaboration between the Illinois Corn Growers Association and the Illinois Soybean Association that involves the University of Illinois ACES right here on campus. And we'll also hear about ethanol and Brazil on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org. In fact, this afternoon, you'll be able to listen to our Commodity Week program. I'll get that posted by about 6 o'clock. Our guests this week include Brian Stark of the Andersons, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, and Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities. Commodity Week, our weekly look at agriculture, tonight on the web at willag.org, tomorrow on our home station, and on many of these radio stations over the weekend.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day finished the nearby contract higher, up around 5.25 cents for the afternoon at $4.32 and a half. The May at $4.34 and three quarters, 5 higher. And December corn at $4.15, up 1.5 cents. January soybeans, $12.25 and a quarter, up 17.5. The March at $12.05 and a half, up 17.5. And November beans at $10.72 and a quarter, 9.5 cents higher. The bean meal, $3.97.90, up $3.40 for the day. And bean oil at $39.93, 88 cents higher. Wheat futures, soft red, $6.08 and three quarters. That finished 10 and a quarter higher. And the hard red at $5.70, up 8.5 cents on the afternoon. Taking a look at the livestock for the day, nearby live cattle futures at $114.45, 67.5 cents higher. April at $118.42 and a half, they're up 60 cents. June live cattle, or rather feeder cattle in the January contract at $140.97 and a half, up 12.5 cents. And the March at $142.60, 62.5 higher. Lean hogs, $65.50. They finished down 47.5 cents for the day. Some of the outside markets, crude oil for the afternoon, the nearby contract at $48.36 a barrel. That's around 51 cents higher. Diesel fuel at $1.49 and four tenths of a cent is 1.6 cents higher, and gasoline on the RBOB at $1.38 and six tenths of a cent, up 3.1 cents. The U.S. dollar for the day at 89.67, down 0.689. Now we're joined by Matt Bennett at agmarket.net in Windsor, Illinois. Hi, Matt. Tell me about how the market traded in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I can. We can dive right in here. You know, this market's tried several times to go up through $12 on soybeans on, you know, the March and May contracts. Just tried it again yesterday, actually, and then today, about late in the morning, you know, we saw mid to late morning, we saw March, May, July, and even January closed above $12. And so, you know, a couple of different things going on. First of all, this dollar just continues to get hammered. You know, first of all, the dollar is as low as what it's been in over 2.5 years. And so, you know, the markets are taking note of that. Export sales for both corn and beans were pretty good, and I think even for beans, maybe a little bit better, relatively speaking, because we weren't really expecting, you know, almost a million metric tons to be sold. You know, bottom line for us, I guess, looking at exports, is that we haven't seen any exports on the daily report in the morning. You know, so it's a little bit of a, I guess, what you would call a pleasant surprise. So, yeah, we saw corn close up a nickel and beans up 16, 18 cents.
So the dollar is playing an important role. It's been a long time since it's been below 90. That makes, of course, agricultural commodities from the United States much cheaper on the world marketplace. How much support is this going forward, do you think, and can it be sustained?
You know, I think it's supportive. I don't know that it's necessarily bullish in and of itself, you know, but bottom line, the last few years, you know, we've been struggling versus the real in that our dollar had been too strong, you know, and products out of of South America, out of Brazil, and you know, especially just simply we couldn't compete with. And so, you know, we come in here, for instance, on a day like today, and you see, you know, a really good export sales report this morning. Certainly nice to see, you know, corn pushing, you know, 2 million, and then soybeans, once again, 900 and some thousand. So, you know, I mean, those are really good levels for us. And I think that, you know, the dollar's probably got a little to do with it. Obviously, you know, South American weather has something to do with it as well. And I think the Chinese are watching very closely, you know, to see what's going to happen down there. What are we going to look at as far as total crop sizes? When's that crop going to show up on the world market? You know, and ultimately, what's it going to mean to prices? Because, you know, if they end up with a 135, it's a little bit different on prices than if they end up with a 125.
It felt a little disturbing earlier in the week to watch the corn market lay flat when the soybeans were gaining. However, today, they kind of went step in step. That's probably a good sign.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, you know, you look at all three of the big three, you know, corn's up a nickel, beans, like I said, up 16 to 18, and then wheat market's up solid. I mean, it's been nice to see here in the last few days, a couple of times, the wheat market's kind of lent some help over to corn and beans. I think last week with wheat being up 39 cents, that's part of the reason why beans were able to kind of hang in there, and corn had just a small gain on the week. You know, on a week whenever all you heard about was weather in South America was maybe looking just a little bit better. So, you know, you come in here on a week like this, and I think there's a lot of skeptics out there looking at, you know, the rainfall deficit down there, first of all. Second of all, you know, yeah, they might get a couple of well-timed rain events for their first crop, you know, and salvage a decent crop, a good crop, decent to good crop down there. But if you go into the second crop in Brazil with a moisture deficit, there's no question that that raises a lot of eyebrows, because that Safrinha crop typically gets into, you know, a dry period towards the end of the growing season. You don't want to go into that dry already.
On new crop, corn just what, 17 cents below the March contract. Are there opportunities there?
Yeah, I think 415 Dees corn at this time of year, you know, it's something that we haven't enjoyed, you know, for quite some time. You know, last year we were actually just a shade above $4 at this time, you know, late in the year. I think we had some hedges on in that 4 to 405 area, you know, and then, of course, after the first of the year, we ended up falling out of bed. But, you know, it was once you worked into the COVID situation before we really fell out of bed. But 415 to me makes some sense. I don't want to get terribly aggressive, you know, but there's not near the disparity, I think, as you were suggesting here, between old crop corn prices and new crop prices is what there is with beans. You know, you look at over at the bean market, and, you know, for instance, you look at, you know, May beans are at 1206. You look at November beans at 1072. And so there's a much bigger disparity. So I think a lot of times producers take a look at that 1072, and I don't know how they do it, but they're saying, you know what, maybe I don't want to sell at 1072, you know, with cash prices so strong. I understand the mentality, but at the same time, you got to see what 1072 minus your basis, you know, looks like for profit margins here for 2021, because there's no question in my mind that selling either corn or beans up at these levels, you know, with an average crop makes a lot of sense. Do you want to get super aggressive, you know, with us super dry out in the Western Corn Belt? Yeah, maybe not. I think that a person's got to stay flexible. But by all means, making some incremental sales at profitable levels typically ends up being a really good decision.
Hey, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, earlier in the week, Iowa State University announced the results of the 2020 Farmland Value Survey. Extension agricultural economist Wen Dong Zhang made the presentation for Iowa State on YouTube, and as he went through the results, he turned to China as one of the major factors and talked a little bit about what he believes the influence of that nation will be going forward.
My colleague Derma Hayes and I was working with postdoc Xi He, we have predicted that China is about to import about $31 billion from the U.S. From February this year to February next year, even if we do, say, the calendar year calculation from January to December 2020, we roughly have this similar total numbers, around $31 billion, with slight adjustment across the distributions. What is interesting is we have such higher numbers compared to previous years. The range is running $20 to $25 billion. However, the growth is not necessarily seeing additional demand from soybeans, right? So soybeans, as I showed earlier, has shown tremendous growth that we have seen dramatic increase, especially for this year's crop. However, when you are thinking about when China buys this $31 billion, these record level growths are not necessarily coming from soybeans. It's coming from corn that China haven't been bought for such a long and long time in large quantities, and also record exports in pork and beef, largely driven by China still has a pork shortage due to the African swine fever, which they target to return to pre-African swine fever levels next year.
That's Iowa State University Extension agricultural economist Wen Dong Zhang. He was speaking at the Iowa State Land Survey YouTube release earlier in the week. By the way, that survey shows that in 2020, the statewide average for farmland value was $7,559 an acre. That's up from the 2019 average of $7,432 an acre. The highest priced land is in the northwest portion of the state with an average of $9,536 an acre. That's up 2% from the previous year. It ranged from $6,400 on the low end to about $10,780 on the top end. The lowest priced property is in the south central part of the state. It averaged $4,658, and that was up 3.8% for the year. If you'd like to learn more, you can search Google for the 2020 Farmland Value Survey by Iowa State University. Well, the Illinois Soybean Association and the Illinois Corn Growers Association have announced that they are working together now on precision conservation management. That program, PCM, seeks to enhance the effectiveness of conservation for the farm while helping reduce complexity and manage the risk associated with practices. David Wessel is an at-large director for Illinois Soy, and he's the chair of the Utilization Committee. He says it should be a great collaboration.
Through this investment, the economic and environmental benefits of these practices will allow the sharing of knowledge needed for a sustainable future for all. Expanding the PCM project to new regions of Illinois will give farmers the tools they need to make viable decisions and to be the solution in addressing changing weather patterns and water quality wherever they farm in our state. And partnering with Illinois Corn will allow us to provide valuable resources for all farmers in Illinois that will help inform them of the latest development pertaining to increased productivity, profitability, and best management practices.
If you'd like to learn more about the collaboration, you can do that online at precisionconservation.org. One of the founding members of PCM happens to be the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, takes the anonymous data collected and then puts it back together so that producers like Illinois Soybean Association District 10 Director Elliot Uphoff can make decisions that are related to their own operations. Uphoff, for instance, says he used precisionconservation.org to help make a decision about tillage passes.
I'm always trying to cut out steps. And if I can look into this data and see, hey, if I cut out this tillage pass, I'm not losing any money. Maybe, in fact, I'm gaining money. And that's the kind of information I'm looking for. And I think PCM is going to bring to the table is that usable information that's going to help change my operation for the better.
Elliot Uphoff is from the Illinois Soybean Association. The Soybean Association has now joined the Illinois Corn Growers Association and others to target precision management of conservation across the state. You can learn more at precisionconservation.org. And finally today, this bit of agricultural news. On December the 15th, the Brazilian government decided to let the current tariff rate quota, or TRQ, expire and replace it with a 20% tariff on all imports of U.S. ethanol. On a media call conference December the 16th, Jeff Cooper, president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, said RFA is extremely disappointed with the news.
There was a tariff-free quota that allowed us to get some U.S. ethanol into Brazil duty-free, but the Brazilians let that quota expire in the last few days, and now all gallons going into that market are subject to that 20% tariff, and it will be incredibly disruptive. Brazil has been our top market the past few years, and if this tariff remains in place, we certainly expect that to change.
To add insult to injury, not only will U.S. exporters of ethanol not have access to the Brazilian market, but the Brazilian ethanol exporters have greater access to the U.S. market.
Regulations like California's LCFS and even the federal RFS actually incentivize the use of imported sugarcane ethanol over the use of U.S.-produced corn ethanol. So we are hoping to work with the new USTR and the rest of the new administration once they get settled to address this issue.
And Cooper says RFA is looking forward to working with the incoming Biden administration and the new U.S. Trade Representative's office. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Mike Tenura is here. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. Our last conversation until the new year. I appreciate all the work you did for us through the 2020 year, and I'm looking forward to talking with you in 2021.
Yeah, same here. That sounds fantastic. And hopefully 2021 will be a little bit of a more exciting year for everybody, at least in a good way.
Well, exciting is kind of a fun term as it relates to weather, because right now there continues to be some excitement. And maybe we should look back on some recent 2020 weather. I'm wondering how dry it has been in Brazil, particularly over the last, I don't know, couple of months or so.
Well, that's a great question. And if you look back over the last 90 days at the top four soybean states in Brazil, they've been the driest in at least 41 years. Now, one of the things we need to keep in mind is that there's been a pretty sharp decrease in rainfall over that period of time in those northern areas. And even after we account for that, we still end up with the driest period in at least 41 years. So the last 3 months have been very dry and historically dry in the soybean belt. If we slice it up into a little bit of a shorter period and just look at the last 6 weeks or so, well, then the northern half of the soybean belt still shows up as being the driest in at least 41 years, but the southern half doesn't look quite as dry. It was only a little bit drier than normal since November 1st. So the big thing to figure out is what this is going to mean for soybean yield. As we move forward, the pattern looks a little bit different. We're finally going to start seeing some decent rains in those northern areas, and that's all going to start up by Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday coming up, and then continue for about a week or maybe even 10 to 12 days. The reason it's going to start raining there is because the cool front is moving to the north as we speak, and it eventually will reach the northern soybean areas and then dissipate as we move forward. So the dryness story is going to end through the end of the year, and then we'll get into next year. Now, we do start harvesting soybeans at the end of January and the start of February, so it's not really all that far away until we'll start getting some of the answers that we're looking for, but we're just going to have to wait until then.
So your assumption here, or what you've been telling me, is that the first half of the growing season for soybean was really dry, but the second half might be about normal?
Well, we're entering the second half now, and at least the next week or two look to be fairly normal. So yes, I would agree with that statement. However, we need to get all the way through January and then into February. One of the things we started to look at is whether or not there's a correlation between the lack of rain over the last 90 days or even the last 6 weeks, and then what happens later on in the season. And there's really not. There's almost no correlation between those two variables. And what that means is that weather coming up will be independent of what's happened to this point. So it could turn wetter and then stay wetter, or it could just be a little bit of a wet period in the middle of a drought. We just don't have enough information to be able to answer that question at the moment.
Are you watching any particular weather systems at the moment?
Well, we certainly are. There's a system moving across Argentina, or at least approaching Argentina today. That's going to light up a pretty decent thunderstorm cluster tomorrow and Saturday. And that's important, too, because Argentina's been drying out as well. This dryness story extends across a big chunk of South America. But they're going to see some rain this weekend. Once we get beyond this weekend in Argentina, there's not much behind it, so it's going to dry out again, and that's going to be something to monitor as we move into the end of the year. Southern Brazil is also going to receive rain from that same system. It'll take a day or two later to get there, but we'll see thunderstorms between Saturday and Monday in southern Brazil and Paraguay, and that will also keep the dryness story away from them for a little while, even though they're also going to turn drier through the end of the year. Then that same system, again, that's going to reach central and northern Brazil and the northern half of that soybean belt once we get into early next week. And then it's going to hang up there for a while, and that's why they're going to start to turn seasonably wetter. So it's just going to take a while to figure all this out. That does take us through the end of the year, but once we get into next year, we'll be thinking about different things. The one thing we need to keep in mind is that a La Niña is in place, and sometimes that does lead to below normal rainfall in Argentina and southern Brazil. Whether or not this one behaves the same, and that ends up being the case next month, is just going to take a little while to determine.
I'm wondering, Mike, if you could divide the continent, South America, up into regions and give me a quick estimate of what each of those regions is like or conditions might be.
We can kind of divide their production regions across all of South America into thirds. So that northern third is extremely dry. That's the area that we're concerned about. But that's the area that's also going to be the wettest over the next 1 to 2 weeks. The middle third was very dry up until about 4 to 6 weeks ago, and then it turned wetter. And right now, they're kind of hanging on the edge between having okay rainfall and being too dry. But they do have some rain coming up, and so that story is going to be a little bit muddled here for a while. But they're basically doing a little bit better. Then you go into that southern third, which is mostly comprised of Argentina. And the story there has been one of drought conditions leading into the start of this season, but then it's rained on and off here and there. Every time it looked like it was going to turn real dry, and we're in one of those situations right now because the coverage of topsoil and subsoil dryness are both increasing pretty rapidly this week. It rained, and that's what's going to happen again now. We're looking at a problem in Argentina, and then all of a sudden, here comes the rain. So they're kind of bubbling between a problem and getting out of a problem. And that's probably the way they're going to stay for a couple more weeks, which is why January weather is going to be very important this year.
Hey, thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome, Todd. Have a great set of holidays coming up.
Hey, you too. That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather. Joined us from his office in Chicago, Illinois. He won't be back, by the way, until the new year because the 24th and the 31st land on Thursdays. You've been listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media.